From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Later on tonight, open lines, a little book giveaway as well. And congratulations tonight to Coast listeners James and Elaine. They got married today. They live in Northern Ireland. How about that? Listening to Coast, way out there. Of course, it is an international program, isn't it? Here's what's happening. A police officer has been shot dead and three suspects in custody now after a shooting at a traffic stop in New Mexico. The shooting occurred when the officer pulled over a vehicle in Hatch, New Mexico. He'd been on the force for only 2 years. Another officer arrived at the traffic stop to assist the first officer when a passenger from the vehicle exited and fired shots. The suspects then fled the scene. They were caught eventually. Sad story. The leader of the Islamic State terror group in Afghanistan and Pakistan has been killed by a U.S. drone. A Pentagon spokesperson said that Hafez Saeed Khan died July 26 from an airstrike in a province in eastern Afghanistan. I'm sure he's already been replaced. Hillary Clinton and her running mate Tim Kaine released their 2015 tax returns on Friday, a move meant to put pressure on Donald Trump to disclose his returns. According to the campaign release, Bill and Hillary Clinton paid $3.6 million in taxes on an adjusted gross income of $10.6 million. The filings show that the Clintons paid a federal tax rate of 34.2% in 2015. The bulk of their income, more than $6 million, came from speaking fees for appearances made largely before Hillary Clinton launched her campaign in 2015. Let's check in with online columnist John Curtis. John, I got to ask you, why hasn't Donald Trump released his taxes yet?
Well, I think he said, you know, that, you know, he's under audit and he's not going to do it. You know, he released financial disclosure statements, you know, for the campaign. So I think that if the audit is completed at some point, he might. But it doesn't look like he'll complete it. The interesting thing about Hillary's tax returns, George, have to do with the charitable contributions. And this is in the context of Rand Paul coming out today and saying that she should be locked up, not just for what, you know, with the email situation, you know, of transmitting classified information. She should be locked up for milking a nonprofit organization, you know, the Clinton Foundation, a non-government organization, an NGO, and enriching herself from that organization. And Paul has stated publicly that if she gets into the White House, and he's a respected senator, that she will use that office basically for her own, you know, financial gain. So, you know, the interesting thing is that when Trump comes out with a statement like that you heard the other day, that ISIS, you know, was created by Obama and Hillary Clinton, and this big brouhaha started, everybody knows that it's a tongue-in-cheek statement, except the press or the Hillary campaign that wants to, you know, make an issue of this, like, yes, he really believes that Obama is related to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, you know, the head of ISIS. Everybody knows that the power vacuum that was created when they pulled the plug on, when Obama pulled the plug on the Iraq war, took all of the troops out of Iraq, is what created the power vacuum that led to the development of ISIS, that really was just a bunch of Saddam Hussein dead enders from his Revolutionary Guard.
I've got to put you and Howard Bloom in a room, John, and see which one of you comes out.
Well, I think you know what'll happen there. But I think the thing about the campaign right now is you can't trust any of these polls right now, because there is a thing called a reverse Bradley effect, and I don't know if you are familiar with that or your audience is, but it has to do with people not wanting to admit who they're going to vote for.
That's why some exit polls are not accurate, because they don't want to tell you the truth.
They don't want to tell you the truth. And there's a lot of folks that are, and that's why the Hillary campaign, despite being up, you know, in some of these early, you know, preliminary polls and in some of the battleground state polls, are very suspicious of the polling, because they know there's a kind of silent majority out there that is, you know, poised to kind of assert itself on election day.
Well, we've got 3 months to go, John Curtis, 3 months to go, and we shall see what happens. Talk to you later. Two people found dead in a New York cemetery, victims of an apparent lightning strike. Did I say any more there? And a lot of people are gathering, of course, at the Lost Dutchman State Park in Apache Junction, Arizona. They're having a great time looking at the Perseid meteor shower. Who's out there? Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Hey, Stephen.
Hi, George. What an amazing night. You know, just as we were coming on air, we saw the first of the most amazing of meteors to come. George, this is an amazing event. A couple of hundred people out here all celebrating meteor madness, but for the entire coast audience, don't give up on this shower, anybody. Look into the northeast sky if your weather's clear. And, George, the sky show promises to get better. Wow, we just saw another one, George. That was quite, yes. No, it goes on all night, as people probably know. But, George, this is just an amazing time to be out celebrating the night sky. And, you know, folks, let's give a nice shout-out for Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Yeah! I love it, Stephen. Thanks. Have fun out there. Perseids. I saw one of them shoot by last night, so they're out there. Peter Davenport, of course, heads the National UFO Reporting Center. And, Peter, what do you got for us this week?
I wish I were down there with Dr. Sky and his group tonight.
Oh, me
that
too.
Sounds like fun. I saw a couple of them last night myself. It's a fun expedition to watch them. You, and I'm sure your engineer will be relieved to know that I'm going to limit myself to three reports tonight, albeit very good reports, but I'd like to start my report with a special greeting to two special friends of the UFO community who reside down in Gig Harbor, Cy and Joanne. They bill themselves as Cy and Badger. I had the great pleasure of dropping in on them last weekend when I was west of the mountains, and we had a wonderful time. They've been very supportive of the UFO community. They've sometimes drive 80 and 100 miles to get to a monthly meeting. They do investigations, and I mention it in particular because Cy, a lifelong firefighter, is battling with a serious bout of cancer, and I'd just like to say a special greeting to them and hopes that Coast listeners will include Cy in their prayers tonight. First case I'd like to talk about, this is a dynamite case, George. On the 3rd of August, I believe that was Wednesday, 10 p.m. Mountain Time, a group of eight scouts were at Philmont Scout Camp, very just south of Cimarron, New Mexico. That's northeast of Albuquerque and northeast of Santa Fe. About 10 p.m., five of them were in their sleeping bags and perhaps sound asleep. Three of them, including a scoutmaster, were still awake. They suddenly became aware of a very loud whirring sound. They peeked their heads out the tent doorway and were just utterly shocked to see a big square of green lights hovering in the night sky or moving very slowly. It was quite a sighting. They saw it for about, they estimate, 15 to 30 seconds. It was an array of green lights, which themselves were arrayed in squares and rectangles and so on and so forth. I'm going to ask them to submit a written report, and we should have that report posted to our website sometime this weekend. The next report I'd like to focus on comes from Wethersfield, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. That's a bedroom community to the south of Hartford, Connecticut. On the 8th of August, a young woman came in from work, arrived at her house from work. It was 9:35 p.m. Eastern Time. And she got out of her car. She noticed how calm and how quiet it was. It was a clear sky and a weeknight. And suddenly she, too, like the scoutmaster and his cohorts, became aware of a loud whirring sound. She stopped what she was doing. She faced the sound and focused her eyes a little more carefully and was flabbergasted, quite shocked, to see a wedge-shaped craft hovering motionless in the nighttime sky above her house. The interesting thing about this, George, is that it had yellow lights on all four corners, ruling out any possibility of any kind of terrestrial aircraft.
Or commercial, yeah.
Really interesting report. And the last report I'd like to share with our listeners tonight comes from Tacoma, very close to Gig Harbor, which I mentioned at the beginning of my broadcast here. Two witnesses, husband and wife, I think, were standing outside this morning. This is from today, the 12th of August, looking at the Perseid meteor shower, waiting for a meteor to appear. And they were suddenly made aware of five distinctly round lights in a wedge-shaped pattern streaking across their heads. It went from horizon to horizon in 10 seconds, and it left no trail across the sky, so could not have been meteors, could not have been satellites. Very interesting sighting. We'll have all of these reports and many more posted to our website sometime this weekend. I encourage Coast listeners to go and enjoy some really, really interesting reports this week.
Super. Thanks, Peter. Going back to your old UFO sighting spot in St. Louis in a few days. Up next, we're going to be talking with Karen Anderson, Amazing Paranormal Encounters with Animals. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Karen Anderson is a professional animal communicator. Her main book is called Hear All Creatures, by the way. She's a psychic, a medium from the eastern area of the Washington. She discovered that she had psychic abilities and could talk to the animals at a very young age. Karen surrounded herself with many animals over the years, learned how to understand their thoughts and feelings. And as her career path took her into the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, Karen realized that her psychic skills enabled her to read the energy of the suspects and criminals she dealt with while she was a deputy sheriff in Bailey, Colorado. Welcome, Karen Anderson, on Coast to Coast. That must have been interesting, Karen.
Yeah, it sure was. You'd be surprised what the animals can tell you.
Oh, my gosh. They see it firsthand, don't they?
They do. And, you know, animals don't lie. So, well, cats do sometimes, but...
How do they communicate with you? Just psychically?
You know, we all can communicate with our animals. We just don't realize that we're doing it. We think that we're picking up on their body language or just because we know them so well, we know their habits. But they can send us messages in like the flash of an image. They can plant an image in our mind just like they can read our minds. They can send us an image that they're hungry or tired or thirsty or sick or whatever it is. And I actually hear the animals. I can hear them speaking to me, but I also can see the different images that they flash at me. So they send messages in all different ways, and they're sending us messages all the time, but we're just not listening. We're not paying attention.
And, of course, your book, Hear All Creatures, it's about your journey as an animal communicator, and then you contributed a story to the Amazing Paranormal Encounters book as well, did you not?
That's correct. I just had an opportunity to submit some of my most amazing paranormal encounters for that volume 2, and that just came out here in February of this year, so that's pretty cool. Lots of good stuff in there. But I've had all kinds of experiences with the animals, some paranormal, some amazing, and some just, you know, I always say that the day that I stop being amazed is the day I'll stop doing this.
Yeah, there's an amazing story, and you as a law enforcement officer, you would get a kick out of this, Karen, but they're thinking of letting a parrot testify in court because it mimics the last words of a guy who they claim was shot to death by his wife. And it's weird. It really is weird, but they're thinking of letting the parrot in court.
Well, you know, I have actually a similar story to that involving a murder. And a client contacted me because her brother was murdered. And she said, "Hey, Karen, my brother's two beloved cats were in the apartment. Do you think they can tell you something? Do you think they can tell you who did it?" And so we had a session, and sure enough, they gave me the initials of the primary suspect in the case and described the man to me down to the shoes that he was wearing. So I went into it not knowing anything other than this person had been murdered, and the cats told me all kinds of stuff. So, you know, I mean, maybe the parrot has actually what happened, the truth behind the story of what actually happened.
Well, he definitely is mimicking something he's heard. I mean,
right.
No doubt about that.
Right.
When this first came for you, your ability to communicate with animals, how'd that happen?
Well, it was a long time ago when I was a little kid, and I just thought that everybody could talk to the animals. I grew up in Southern California, just about a half an hour from Disneyland, where I don't know if you remember back in the 60s, they had this particular, it wasn't really a ride, but it was called the Tiki Room, where all the birds would sing and the flowers would bloom in the tiki,
no.
tiki room. And I just remember being there as a kid and just thinking how cool it would be to be able to talk to all the animals and the birds and the flowers like that. And I just grew up, you know, with Mr. Ed, the talking horse, and every Disney movie you've ever seen, the animals talk, Jungle Book and Dumbo and all of those. So I just grew up not thinking that you couldn't.
You know, Karen, anybody who has owned a pet, a dog, a cat, you know that you're communicating with them. They listen, they look at you, they understand. So we know there's that ability, but I've always wondered, are they reading your mind? Do they get that? So tell me about that. Do they have that kind of ability? Do you read theirs, but do they read yours?
Absolutely, positively, 100%, they read our minds. They don't understand some of the bigger concepts. You know, every animal is different. They have a different level of intelligence and a different level of understanding, and some of them are just too tuned into themselves to pay too much attention to what we're doing. But I have found, George, that anywhere from very detailed information comes through about their humans. They'll tell me about upcoming surgeries. They'll tell me about career or job changes. They'll tell me about relationship issues that are going on with their humans. I mean, these are pretty big concepts for animals to know. They don't understand the big picture necessarily, but they understand that there's something going on, and they'll flash an image to me and show me what their human is going through. So they do understand, and there's varying levels just depending on the animal.
You know, Karen, our eyes are the window to the soul, they say. And I think with people and even with animals, if you have that ability, you can look at them and you just know that there's something there. I mean, I used to have some huskies in labs, and when they look at you, you know that they're thinking about something directly related to you, things that were going on, whether they're happy, whether they're not. You could just tell by looking at their eyes. Do you use the eyes a lot for that?
That's exactly what I do. In fact, when I schedule a session with my clients, they email me a picture of their animals, and I use that picture as the way to connect. And it's like having that animal's cell phone number. I just dial up their energy just by having their picture, and it's always through the eyes. And you're right, there's so much that you can tell by looking into an animal's eyes. So absolutely, that's exactly. Are you after my job, George? You're after my job.
No, I've got enough on my plate, Karen. This one's all for you, dear. You have it. I'll be your backup. But
okay, well, I need a backup. Everybody needs a good backup, right?
Tell me about the dealing with suspects and criminals when you were in law enforcement.
I was a deputy in Park County, Colorado, and that's actually where my abilities really started to really
flourish.
Yeah, they did. You know, it was a mountain district, and I worked by myself, and there was they put me on the night shift right out of the police academy, and the nearest backup car was sometimes a half an hour away or maybe even more, depending on if they had gone home and gone to bed. So I really had to learn to work smart and to pay attention when I went to a call. I had to learn to read
the energy of
the room and the energy of the people that were there. And what I found was that the animals could tell me or show me what had happened or what was going on in that particular situation.
Let's get into that when we come back. Karen Anderson with us, Hear All Creatures. That's her book. on Coast to Coast AM. Just a couple weeks to go, and our live event at Asheville, North Carolina begins. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have a great time. Three great guests. They include ufologist Micah Hanks and William Forstchen on EMPs and solar flares. And the paranormal investigator Joshua P. Warren will join us. Plus, we'll have a live band there and special tributes to our law enforcement and our soldiers, past and present, of course. So come on out. No matter where you live, get on a plane and come on out. We've got 28 seats left on the bottom row, and then they've opened up the balcony now. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com. You'll see the highlight reel. Click the picture of Asheville, North Carolina. Takes you to the website of the theater, the Diana Wortham Theater. Click buy tickets, then look for the date, August 27th, and then you click that, and then you pick out your own seats. But come on by. We'll have some fun. Hey, welcome back. Karen Anderson with us. Karen's website, her name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's karenanderson.net, by the way. Hear All Creatures, A Journey of an Animal Communicator. Karen, what would you say in terms of the type of animal is the most receptive?
Oh, boy. You know, I have to just tell it like it is. You know, dogs are so much easier to work with in the work that I do as far as behavior resolutions and dealing with different problems. Cats are impossible. So I would have to say dogs are much more receptive than cats. Cats just have their own agenda. So I'm going with dogs.
Yeah, I've had one cat in my life, and then I have had primarily dogs, and they seem to be a little easier to work with. Cats are smart, and they've got their own minds, and they do what they want to do. Dogs
exactly.
Tend to want to, you know, please you, and they want to make you happy. Cats, they want to make you happy on their terms.
Right. It's all about them.
What about other animals? Is it just dogs and cats, or do you deal with snakes and turtles and hamsters?
Oh, gosh. I've talked to everything from hedgehog to snakes to Cecil the lion to, I mean, you name it.
Tell me about Cecil the lion.
Oh, Cecil the lion. That was like one of the saddest things I've ever had to do.
Oh, no. What happened?
Connect with him. Yeah, that was really, really...
Was he dying?
Day that was. You know, his message just kind of blew me out of the water, and I wasn't expecting it at all. I was just going to check in with him and let him know how very loved he was and that the whole world was kind of mourning his loss, and everyone was saddened by what happened to him. And he delivered a pretty amazing message to me, and I wasn't expecting it at all, and posted it on my Facebook page, and the thing went viral, and in 72 hours, it was like in every country in the world. It was just incredible. And I got messages from people all over the world saying, oh my gosh, Karen, thank you so much. I was having such a hard time dealing with what happened to Cecil that once I read that message, it just gave me peace of mind. And thank you so much for sharing that. It was a pretty incredible message.
It really is. That's amazing what you do. How many animal communicators are out there that do what you do?
Well, when I started, there were like two of us, and that's how long I've been doing it. Now I think you could Google, and you're going to get hundreds and thousands of animal communicators of all different walks of life, and it's awesome. I think everybody should sharpen their skills, because anyone can learn if you have the love for animals and the desire to learn. It's a skill, just like singing or painting or playing tennis. It's just you practice and practice and practice. I teach classes. I teach people how to do this all the time. It's really easy to learn.
Tell me about some of the other people, not necessarily specifically, who are in amazing paranormal encounters. They've all had their own experiences as well, haven't they? In different ways?
They have, yes. You mean in regards to the animal communication, or what do you mean?
Well, they're not all animal communicators, are they?
Oh, no. That's the book Amazing Paranormal Encounters is mostly ghost stories. I was kind of the only...
You're the only communicator.
Well, I was the only weird one in there that was sharing actual sessions. I shared my favorite stories from actual sessions that I had over the years that were kind of paranormal and amazing, but all the rest of those stories in that book are really cool ghost stories and paranormal events. So, yeah, I was kind of the weird one in that one.
Do you deal with communicating with animals who have also passed on?
Oh, yeah. That's a big part of what I do. And, you know, the first time I ever connected with an animal who was deceased, I didn't know that the animal was deceased. And I was shocked to find out later from the person who it belonged to that this animal had passed away. I was amazed at how clear they were and how present they were and how much they knew about what was going on in this person's life. It just was really eye-opening and shocking for me. I couldn't believe it. They're actually easier for me to connect with than those that are here and alive. The ones that have passed on, they're pure energy. So there's no body, there's no physical body to get in the way. It's just pure energy. It's much easier for me to connect with them.
What does a deceased animal want you to know?
You know, the biggest thing I've learned from animals who have passed on is just an overall feeling of celebrate the time that you're here and to be in the moment. You know, animals live in the moment. They're very much about right now. They don't spend time worrying about what's coming up in 2 weeks, and they certainly don't worry about what happened a month ago. They really stress living in the moment and celebrating the time while you're here, and just the ultimate forgiveness. They are so gracious and loving and kind and giving. They're so forgiving, too, of all of our mistakes, whatever we do as humans in their lives. They're so forgiving.
There are animals that can sense people who have cancer. There are animals that can sense when somebody's about to die. They truly are remarkable creatures, aren't they?
I think so. I mean, I'm blown away by how much they know and how much they are tuned into us. You know, they'll tell me about somebody breaking their foot or someone having a tooth pulled. I mean, the detail that they know about us is really incredible.
I'll tell you a story that happened years ago. I was on a date, and I was talking to her at a dinner table about animals because, you know, like I said, I've been a dog owner most of my life. And she said, "Well, George, I hate animals."
Ooh.
I said, "What?" She said, "Yeah, I don't like them. Dogs are stinky. I don't like cats. You know, they go to the bathroom in your house, even though they're in this little box." I got up, paid the bill, and I left.
Good for you.
I left because, you know, you don't have to own an animal. I had one, but I gave her to some people who lost their Labrador. And so they're happy because if you travel a lot, it's really not fair to kennel to your dog all the time. I didn't want to do that. And so I don't. But you don't have to own one, but to say you hate them is going a little too far, don't you think?
Yeah. I agree. I'm an animal lover, and I think animal-loving people are the best people in the world. So I get to work with the best people in the world.
You're going to love this charcoal cat story that comes out all the time in the backyard. And it was walking on three legs, kept its fourth paw in the front up. I tried to catch it. I wasn't able to, but it's walking around now. It's been about a month and a half, but I feed it all the time. I put stuff out there for it. But I'm amazed at how they can survive out there. Now, in California, it's a little different than St. Louis. It doesn't have harsh winters, but boy, they adapt, don't they?
They really do, and I do a lot of lost animal cases, and I'm always blown away by how well they survive on their own without food or water or help from humans. You know, we think, you know, two nights without us that they're not going to survive, but boy, oh boy, I'll tell you, George, I've had them come back around a month or two after they've disappeared, acting like nothing happened, especially cats. They just saunter in. They're like, "Oh, here I am." You know, they're a little bit thinner, but none the worse for the wear. You know, they just kind of show up and look around and go over to their food bowl. But yeah, they're pretty resilient.
So tell me a little bit more about animals and reincarnation. Does that happen?
Yes, it does. It happens quite a bit. In fact, I have clients that have had their animals returned to them, and they've been able to tell me, the animals have been able to tell me when they're coming back again and give actual specific details about where their person will find them and how they will find them and how they'll know it's them. It's just like a, it's kind of pre-written, if you will. It's like a plan that's already been written.
I've always wanted to know about this. When an animal gets to a point where it's not functioning like it should, people euthanize them. We don't generally do that with people, unless you're Jack Kevorkian. How do these animals feel about the fact that they are killed, put down, when they become infirm?
Well, and I can only speak from my experience, but I will tell you, I have never yet met an animal that has wanted to die. The only animal I know of that has had a death wish is a human. But the animals, they have such a strong survival instinct. Mother Nature just instills it in them that, I mean, they'll hold on forever and ever and ever until the last possible breath. Just because of Mother Nature and their instincts. But they do ask for help when it comes time for them to transition out of their body because they're very accepting of the death and dying process. They don't fear it like humans do. They see it as a natural step, and they don't get freaked out about it. And the one thing that they stress to me is they want to leave this world with their dignity intact. They don't want to be bedridden. They don't want to be unable to eat or drink or have joy in their life. To them, that's not living. So they will express that they're done. They don't want to die, but will express to me that they're done living that life. They have no more joy in that life, and that they're ready to leave their body.
Does an animal commit suicide?
Not that I know of.
I've never heard of it. I've never heard of it. I've never witnessed it.
Nope.
Just humans. They're the only ones that do that.
Yep.
What has been for you one of the scariest animal paranormal experiences you've had? Come on, scare us, before we get into calls next hour.
God, you know, it's hard to scare me, George. I'm an ex-cop.
Well, scare us.
You know, how do you scare an ex-cop?
All right, scare us.
You know, the scariest things that have happened to me paranormally have been with the departed humans that float around in my house. Like, I'm also a medium, so I can connect with deceased humans, and this one particular spirit person showed up, like, 3 days early for her appointment, and every morning at 4 a.m. she would shake the bed to wake me up because she was so anxious for her appointment, and I kept telling her to get lost and go away. I'm not a morning person. Leave me alone. And she got really mad at me the last time, and when I got up that morning to go make coffee, she had opened every single cupboard, every single drawer, everything in my kitchen. It was totally wide open. She just went in there and had a field day in my house. But that's really the scariest thing that's ever happened. Animals aren't scary to me. Animals are loving and kind and genuine and beautiful and honest, and they're wonderful. It's the humans that are scary.
Oh, no doubt about that, especially what's going on now. We just lost another police officer tonight. Traffic stop at Hatch, New Mexico, gets shot. They've got the three suspects. But what is wrong with people, Karen? I mean,
I don't know. I would be afraid to be a cop in this day. I really would. I mean, my heart goes out to all my brothers and sisters in law enforcement, anyone who has family members in law enforcement. It really, unless you've worn the uniform and the badge, George, you just have no idea what it's like to go out there every day and put your life on the line. You just really don't know.
And you've worked the night shift, which is even tougher because you're approaching a car that is pitch black inside. I guess a lot of people don't turn the lights on when they get stopped. That's pretty dangerous all by itself, isn't it?
That's what I mean. You know, you asked me what the scariest things animals have done, nothing compared to the scary things humans have done. It is. It's literally, you know, it's so frightening. You just have to really resort back to your training and go back to everything that you learned. And, you know, that's where all of my intuitive abilities came in, because you had to be able to trust your instincts and listen to that little voice in your head, because split second can be a matter of life and death when you're a cop. And that's where all my abilities just started to surface and really take off, because you had to. You had to be on your toes.
It's kind of nice to fall back into the sanctity of animals, isn't it?
It is. I have the best job in the world. I get to talk to the animals.
So Hear All Creatures, A Journey of an Animal Communicator. Where do you get the book, Karen?
I think you can get it on Amazon. I am the only one who has actual personalized signed copies by me through my website. They can get those. And it's on Kindle, so it's out there for those who are interested. And I'm also going to be featured in an upcoming documentary about my friend and fellow psychic, Seth Michael. It's called All Around Us.
How about that?
And we're in filming right now. It's called All Around Us, the documentary. It's all about what it's like to be a psychic and the crazy stuff we go through. And there's a whole bunch of really talented psychics that'll be featured in this documentary. So I'm really excited about that.
Have you ever been with a dolphin? I'm really curious about their psychic abilities.
I have, in a SeaWorld kind of setting. I have.
What are they like?
And they're pretty, you know, it's almost like an out-of-body experience to be in their presence. They're so advanced. They just so kind of blow doors off of everything. You know, they're smarter than most people I know. And no offense, but I mean, they really are. They're just incredibly intelligent. And, you know, they just have such an understanding of themselves. They have such an acceptance of themselves. And, you know, animals are just so honest and pure. And they're really not out to do anything other than survive and live their best life. And certainly dolphins and the other cetaceans, they're just a perfect example of really, truly living their life and being in the moment. And that's what I learned from them, is to just celebrate this moment right now. Don't be 2 weeks down the road, and don't be thinking about what happened a month ago.
I've got a friend of mine. She owns 2 pigs, a goat, cats, dogs. She's got the space for it, but loves animals. Loves them. Are you there?
Well, that's pigs, huh?
I thought you were choking to death or something.
No. I have a small farm here out in the Elk, Washington area, so I'm surrounded by all kinds of livestock and cattle and sheep and all kinds of
pigs are pretty smart. They're smart animals, aren't they? You can literally train them to house. You can house train them.
You sure can. They're very, very smart.
They're pretty big too, though.
Yeah, they get really big for sure.
So, how do you train people to communicate with animals? Can you do that?
I do. I teach classes. In fact, I have a class coming up in Port Gamble, Washington in October. I'll be teaching an animal communication class out there at the Port Gamble Ghost Conference.
Are these professionals or are these people who just own pets?
No, these are just normal people who just love their animals. And I train them the same way that I train myself, is everybody gets to select a picture of an animal that they want to try to connect with, and then I run them through a series of steps on how to send and receive messages with that animal. And it's always just amazing at how much information comes through the very first time that my students will attempt this.
All right. Well, let's find out more about that and take calls next.